We know that you have been reporting about Uzbekistan for at least 3 years now, right?
Yeah, the big story, the Telesandra story, broke in September 2012. So when Swedish television reported on it, and I sort of just caught on at that moment, and been working on it since. Not all the time, but every now and then. Recently we followed up. I did a story together with Swedish television about Telesandra in Azerbaijan.
Well, Ola, could you walk us through how the initial revelations that journalists like you learned about Telesandra spiraled into this huge scandal that it became?
Wow, that's a long story, I suppose. There was a Swedish newspaper that, you know, prior to Swedish television had sort of a story that didn't really answer any questions, but Telesandra basically kept quiet that they made this deal with an Uzbek local partner, or at least kept quiet which local partner it was. This newspaper found out that it was Takilant and started asking questions, but really didn't get any answers. So what Swedish television did when they followed up was to show that the clear links to Lara Karimova's associate. Me and others, we could establish more links and even documents proving that she was in fact a business partner with some of these people. And so that's really how it started. And it seems like every door you open, there is a suspicious story behind it.
What happened within the company once the news broke?
You mean in 2012?
Yes.
At first, the CEO called a press conference immediately and said, we have not done anything wrong. And in order to prove that, I'm going to ask a law firm to review all our transactions. But at that time, the criminal investigations had already started in both Switzerland and Sweden. So before that law firm revealed its report, just weeks before actually, some documents became public through the local court here in Stockholm that showed emails that Telesandra executives had been sending each other, which were quite revealing, showing that their actual partner was Gulnara Karimova. And but that was something that Telesandra had not disclosed to the law firm. But the law firm, of course, had to include that information in its report. So the report eventually showed that it couldn't. The law firm couldn't prove that any crime had been committed, but neither could it dismiss that allegation. And also, it concluded that the deal in Uzbekistan was clearly in violation of Telesandra's own ethical standards. So the CEO resigned when that report came out, and even prior to that, the owners were fed up with the board, and they were on their way out. So in 2013, the company got a new board, a new CEO. Later on in 2013, several other executives were fired, mainly the ones who had been close to the deals in that region. And furthermore, the board asked another law firm to review all of the main transactions in the region, and that law firm in turn came to the conclusion that unethical, if not illegal, deals had been made in five countries.
So unethical, not illegal, right? I mean, so they're focusing on that.
Yeah, that's what they think. That's what they think. And then of course, and then Telesandra claims that it's cooperating with criminal investigations in several countries and providing prosecutors with whatever they are asking for, and so on.
And meanwhile, Ola, they continue to do business in Uzbekistan, right?
Yes.
Do you have any information to believe that Telia Sonera to this day is cooperating with the Uzbek security services in the way that it allows them to listen to, for example, on phone calls? Another issue is their complicity to the cotton harvest. We know that there was one piece of information that came out a few months ago when Telia Sonera said that it would not let its workers to go pick cotton, right?
Yeah, that's all of those cotton stories. That's my work. I showed that they were in fact supporting it with hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of food, with delivering food to the workers in last year. It was also obvious that they had been supporting it, sponsoring it for several years. I'm not sure how much and in what way. They did that previous years, but last year they gave the workers food at least, and felt compelled to do so for some reason. So that was a bit of a scandal. And following that, Telia Sonera finally announced, as you mentioned, that they will not participate in any way. So we'll see how that goes and what the consequences will be. I think you were thinking of monitoring and eavesdropping and
right
and so on. Yeah, in practice, I'm not sure if anything has actually changed. What I know is they haven't been able to, or I don't know if they have tried to renegotiate the conditions for having license to operate in Uzbekistan. I know that previously the secret service in Uzbekistan could monitor anything. I mean, I've even seen pictures of these servers with the security service seals on them from Uzbekistan, from Telia Sonera's operator there. So it's presumably ongoing. I would be quite surprised if the regime suddenly decides not to listen, not to use their ability to listen and eavesdrop.
What kind of obstacles has this investigation hit? It's been very slow. We know that nobody has been formally charged yet. Should we expect any charges coming up?
Yeah, what the prosecutors will tell you is that this is an international investigation. They need help from legal authorities in other countries in order to gather evidence, especially from Switzerland. And that takes time. In Switzerland, the system is very complicated. If a Swedish prosecutor asks for a piece of paper that has been confiscated from someone, that person can refuse and go to court, and that court decision can also be appealed. And this is what's been going on. And the Uzbek side has argued that Gulnara Karimova was protected by diplomatic immunity, so that had to be tried in court as well, and so on and so on. And then, you know, if you want to interrogate people in Turkey or Russia or what have you, it's not going to be that straightforward always. So that's the reason they say it's taking time. Also, it's an enormous investigation. I have been told that this is, you know, the second biggest investigation in Swedish history after the investigation into the murder of our former prime minister in 1986. So it's massive. And the Americans are involved, as you know, and the Dutch, and so on and so forth. What I do know is, as you say, no one has been formally charged yet. However, at least three former Telia Sonera executives have been notified that they are suspected of corruption and have been interrogated. And on the Uzbek side, of course, a number of people have been named as suspects, including Gulnara Karimova, but neither of them have been interrogated since they're not here.
I've always said that there hasn't been much cooperation between the investigating countries and the government of Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan did file a protest to the Swedish Foreign Ministry when all of this sort of started.
So that was what, in 2012, 2013, basically?
Yeah, mm-hmm. at that time, yeah.
What do you expect to happen with the investigation, ultimately, Ole? How will, for example, U.S. entry into the case affect what's happening in Sweden?
Yes, that's a very good question. It's something that I have been thinking about lately, trying to sort of figure out how these investigations overlap and what that means. One interesting aspect, just as an example, is that, you know, that there was a money supposedly belonging to Gunnar Karimov, or to Takilant at least, in Sweden, in a Swedish bank that was frozen, $30 million US dollars. And that money has not been frozen just by on behalf of the Swedish prosecutor, but also by request later on from both the Dutch and the American authorities. So the money in the Swedish bank is now frozen frozen three times. I've noticed that that seems to be happening in Switzerland as well, where most of the money is. And who's going to get the money in the end if there are if we will see convictions? I really don't know. It's going to be some sort of tug of war. That could be quite interesting to follow.
What kind of feedback do you get from your reporting about Uzbekistan? I know that you've reported about Central Asia, about former Soviet countries, but just your specific stories on corruption and this even murder attempt case involving a famous imam from Uzbekistan who lives with his family in Sweden. Is there a wide interest in reading these reports in Sweden?
Yeah, these are big stories. Especially the Telia Sonera story has been really big. I suppose sometimes people are a bit fed up with it, but there's been some major breakthroughs and been some. I haven't won any awards myself, but I mean the other Swedish television groups of reporters. They're just winning Swedish and international awards after these reports. So it's been really big news.
So we can say that the Swedish people know and care about these issues.
Yeah, I think it was quite a shock. Sweden is one of the world's least corrupt countries, if you are to believe.
Yeah, one of the cleanest, as we say.
Yeah, and so I think it was quite a shock that a Swedish company and largely government-owned, in addition to that, and a company that a lot of people have shares in. No other company in Sweden has that, as many shareholders, actually. So a lot of small shareholders. And that a company like that would be seemingly corrupt on a massive scale has, I think, shocked and surprised a lot of people. Now, of course, there have been so many stories, so now people are not very surprised anymore about new findings, but certainly a few years back it was...
And how much real pressure is there from Swedish media and public on the company?
Well, Swedish media certainly have certainly been scrutinizing the company, and I suspect will continue to do so. I think a lot of people are now waiting for the trial to start, and that might happen next year. And I don't know if there's any pressure from the public, not that much perhaps. It's difficult to measure, I suppose.